little bit of the Taxman. Remember that one? Why are we playing it? Because today is, in fact, Tax Day. Normally it's April 15th, but they gave us a little reprieve, apparently, because of the, I don't know why, maybe Easter holiday. But if you don't have your taxes in by the end of the day today in the post office and get a postmark on it, you're in big trouble. So make sure that you do. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works. I am Paul Malloy, along with my buddy Big Ed Davis. It is Monday, April 18th. In a few minutes, Wayne Cruz of the Competitive Enterprise Institute is going to be with us. We're going to talk about the rise in inflation. We all know about that, do we not? And how Washington, D.C. policymakers are actually making it worse. We're not surprised about that either, right? But we're going to go into the details with Wayne Cruz. And Florida is rejecting 41% of mathematics textbooks for the kids. Because you know what they're doing? They're sprinkling things like critical race theory and other political philosophies inside of a math textbook. What? For these kids. You know, they want to kind of inculcate them. Even when they don't know they're being inculcated. They don't even know what the word means. Anyway, we are going to get some thoughts on this whole thing with the proprietor of the barber pole, Andrew Ceresi. We may even get some talk with his brother, our eye in the northern sky, Angelo Ceresi. So stay tuned for that. And is Russian President Vladimir Putin really thinking of dropping a nuke on Ukraine? That is what the president of Ukraine is hinting at. He's talking about radiation pills. We're going to talk about that. And in our ultimate top 10, we have a good one. The top 10 most popular first ladies. Most popular first ladies. Who do you think they are? Stay tuned. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. Guys, this is now officially spring, is it not? The Easter Bunny has greeted us. What better way to celebrate than by having a nice haircut, looking good, wandering down the street? So get over to Andrew's Master Barbershop. They are open Tuesdays through Saturdays in the Overcast Plaza in Dunedin. It is just off State Road 580 Main Street on Overcast Drive. Call first for your appointment, 727-733-3773. Well, you know, the N-word, in this case, the nuclear. Vladimir Zelensky urging his people in Ukraine to be ready for the worst-case scenario, saying that Russia's potential use of a nuclear weapon cannot be ruled out. He said, we must prepare for the bleak scenario and get hold of medicine, which could help curb radiation sickness, like radiation pills. He was talking with this English Telegram channel over the weekend about this. He said, nuclear weapons could not be ruled out with Putin, especially because of the way that Ukraine is stalling Putin's advancement in his country. Putin ramped up, in other words, made even a bigger his offensive efforts after the sinking of one of his big battleships Thursday. So anyway, things are not getting better. I don't know how these people in the Ukraine, they have got the heart of a lion, what they are going through. I think everybody in the world respects what they are doing. In the meantime, the foreign minister, former Russian foreign minister, says that Putin would not only consider nuclear weapons in the event he feels an existential threat, but he might use them. He said they could be used. He said, but in very, very specific situations. This is former Russian foreign minister Andrei Kozarev. He said, if Russia or one of those countries really threatened in their hearts, existentially that is, if NATO troops come to Moscow, then probably they would use nuclear weapons. So that's kind of what he's talking about. But he said there is no existential threat to Russia under the present circumstances. I don't think Putin is, you know, when they say he's a monster, then in the same breath they'll say he's crazy. I don't think in the scientific sense of the word he's crazy. I think he's calculating. You can be a monster and not be crazy, can't you? You can be calculating. You can figure out what you're doing. So maybe, you know, he's not near pushing a nuclear button. He doesn't feel personally that the country is threatened. So we'll see where all of it goes, but kind of scary when they're talking about, okay, let's go get some radiation pills and get ready for something, you know? That is kind of a strange situation. In the meantime, and we may be talking about this if Angelo Ceresi is on the line a little bit later, New York City Mayor Eric Adams now agrees with his former New York Police Department commissioner that progressive politics has played a role in the hike in crime in their city. He said the scales right now are tipped very heavily in favor of reforms of the progressive left. He said, well-intended, some needed, but a bit too far. And what we have as a result is this growing fear of crime, this growing actual amount of crime in almost every American city. Now, this is he was a former policeman, I guess the police superintendent in New York. He's a black man. He's the mayor. And he came across at first as if he was going to be tough on crime. He gets into the office, maybe not so much. He starts to reverse back to the far left Democratic mantra. And apparently, Ed was just telling me before we went on air, you know that shooting in Portland at the shopping plaza? Apparently, the guys that were involved, or at least one of them, Ed, is actually out even sooner than the people that they injured.
Actually, it was the mall shooting in South Carolina.
Oh, South Carolina. I'm sorry. Yeah, I said Portland. I meant South Carolina.
The woman that is accused of doing the shooting is already out on the $25,000 bond.
A woman?
Woman, yes.
Wow. Was it sort of gang-related, you know, from what you can tell?
I don't know.
It was an intentional shooting.
Yes.
It wasn't like somebody was crazy and just randomly started shooting
last
people.
Last time I checked, you shoot somebody with a gun, it's an intent to kill.
Well, that's true.
So you're telling me for a murder charge or whatever is $25,000 bond in South Carolina?
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Attempted this murder?
And this is one more nail in the coffin for these these Democratic-run cities.
We're so afraid to put
bad people away for good.
People in prisons that deserve it because of their skin color or the fact that they're just flat out crazy.
That's right.
I mean, listen, you are flat out crazy if you pick up a gun and you go shoot people at the mall.
Sure.
Or you go to a school and you shoot kids. You're flat crazy. There are no pills that are going to fix that. And I would never trust you in society again.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Exactly right. Okay, let us take our break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Wayne Cruz about this hike in inflation and how those nuts in Washington are making it even worse.
People all over the world, join in. Start a love tree. Love tree.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on the day after Easter. Welcome back, everybody. Delighted to be here, and we are delighted to have back an old buddy, Wayne Cruz. He is a regulatory policy expert with the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. You know them. They are always fighting on the behalf of business, and rightly so. And we're going to talk a little bit about this inflation situation. By the way, I guess, Wayne, our inflation is, what, 8.5% higher than it was a year ago. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Good morning. Thank you a lot for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Biden isn't just doubling down on big government. He's trillioning down.
I think you're right.
That's a big reason for a lot of what's going on. And I've been watching this administration for a while. You know, we've been looking at the regulatory state for many years at CEI. You've got the spending side of things, and we're now at $30 trillion in the hole with the federal government. But there's also the hidden tax of regulation. And at the same time that spending is growing, the regulatory side of things are growing too. There are lots of reasons for the inflation. You know, part is blamed on the quantitative easing that's happened. Plenty have blamed elements of the war in Ukraine. Plenty have blamed, especially with gas prices, Biden's clampdown on access to affordable energy, the kind of the war on affordable energy. But a lot of things have happened all over the last couple of years, beginning with the Coronavirus Act and the incursions on business there with respect to family leave mandates at the very worst time when business couldn't afford it at the beginning of the pandemic. Then you had the massive Treasury intervention. You had interference with rental markets and eviction moratoria. You had even Trump extending these things. You had a massive defense bill. You got a increase in the debt limit. Rather than McConnell, for example, in December, insisting that government retrench a little bit, the debt, it's almost as if the debt limit is the only remaining institutional tool we have to roll things back a little bit. But instead, the Republicans went along with that. Biden this year has just utterly turned loose. He has what he calls whole-of-government agendas, and whole-of-government is his own term. And I'm telling you this all in relation to inflation because I think all of this is related
right
to mangling in the marketplace. He's got a whole-of-government agenda on climate crisis, and that's his phrase too, climate crisis, on competition policy, and you just talked about defending legitimate business. Well, his competition policy is either steering business or replacing it altogether with government. He's also got these massive equity programs, and you've heard the terms that he's been using on racial justice and so forth. But what he's doing in terms of they call it environmental justice and all sorts of, he's had Buttigieg out talking about highways and things of that sort. The federal government is so huge now. It's spending over $600 billion a year, and its procurement heft is almost, while Biden talks about monopoly, it's really the monopoly power of government as a buyer, what's called monopsony, that interferes in the market so much, requiring Buy American, requiring union wages, requiring procurement that meets certain government standards, and those kinds of things. There's almost no aspect that you can point to anymore that isn't being heavily influenced by the federal government in the economy. So that's one of the big reasons for inflation and for regulatory costs, which, you know, we talk about those costs a lot, you know, with you on the show and in our 10,000 Commandments report, but nobody's really actually measuring them. We can point to the federal debt and the annual deficit, which is now going to be $1 trillion a year as far as the eye can see. But we don't have a grasp on these kinds of regulatory costs. So I think you see the traditional explanations, you know, about quantitative easing and the war and things like that. But I think there's a lot more things underlying why prices and markets are getting mangled so
yeah.
much.
I always think of your organization and others like yours as voices crying in the desert. You know, is anybody even hearing you? Because
we're doing this for posterity.
Look, Biden's.
They'll always be in America. It just won't be here.
Yeah, I mean, this is so sad and scary in a way. Look, even people in this country that don't follow things like you do. Biden's numbers are now, his favorability numbers are in the low 30s. Uh-huh. Everybody understands that there's something wrong. Everything has gone wrong. Now, you know, if it isn't the border or inflation or the war in Ukraine, you know, it's crime in the streets. It seems like this is the worst of possible times. And we've had some bad times, but everything is kind of coming together. And, you know, I think it's granted now that the Democrats are going to lose control of the House in November, and probably the Senate. In my opinion, they will lose control. Now you will drag Biden a little bit more towards the center. He's been pulled to the far left. Everybody knows that. He's going to be pulled more towards the center. I don't know if anything is ever going to get done until a new election for president. But it's a total mess. Now, Friday, I think it was, Wayne, and of course, just before a holiday on a Friday, if they release information on something that they're doing in government, it's because they don't want anybody to really know about it. And they've decided to open up additional acreage, U.S. Government acreage, for drilling, which goes against the entire Biden mantra from the beginning about shutting down these oil companies. I just wanted you to talk a little bit about that, whether that's going to do any good, et cetera.
Well, over the longer term, it would. The problem is that the interference shouldn't have been happening a year ago. It shouldn't have been happening in oil markets back in the Obama administration. It shouldn't have been happening with John Kerry pushing an inefficient, non-green economy, because it's not green, but that kind of interference plays over a long term. What Psaki had been doing prior to Biden's new announcement that happened last week, and I'd heard about that too. There's like one or two things where Biden had done something that you could call deregulatory. He lets you buy contact lenses over the hearing aids over the counter,
yes.
Things like that. nothing big, but I had noticed that. But Psaki's line, and I guess even the reporters that she was having to talk to each day wasn't buying it, but she kept on saying repeatedly in their daily briefings that, oh, well, these companies have hundreds of leases that they're just sitting on and they're not using. And then so they tried that for a while, and then Biden did a speech a couple of weeks ago in which he said, well, they're just going to start revoking the permits. So none of that was really flying. I think there was a lot of pushback from petroleum producers and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
Miners, and they got that change. But it's just normal that you don't, when you've got inflation, you don't do silly things like we do in energy policy. But like you say, and this often happens with the regulatory reports I look at, they'll pop out on a Friday evening.
You know, yeah, of course.
maybe they'll be asked about it today, because I expect, since there wasn't on Friday, there'll be a briefing today where they get a chance to respond,
yeah,
to get the administration to react to that.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Wayne Cruz. He is a regulatory policy expert with the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're talking about this inflation. I mean, you got to be old enough like me to remember how bad things were maybe under Jimmy Carter. And it was that, they used the term malaise, Wayne. I don't know if you remember all of that, but it was called a malaise. You know, everybody, it was like a fog hanging over everything. And of course, Carter was swept away by Reagan in the 1980 presidential election. And I think there's going to be another tsunami here in November, maybe 70 or 80 I don't know how many congressmen. And then you got all these Democrats retiring anyway. They don't want to be watching. They don't want to be part of the tsunami, I guess.
Well, what will be interesting will be, and you know, this is always the case. We always do, you know, CEI is nonpartisan. Often you'll find that a lot of the economic regulatory programs are aggravated by Republicans, too,
sure.
rather than eliminated. I mean, it was Nixon that gave us the EPA. It was a Republican Sherman that gave us the antitrust laws. So there are a lot of ways that Republicans intervene. But the last time that there was significant reform of the regulatory state, and I say this again because I see that as pertinent to inflation and interference and rising costs and all that and inefficiency, was back in the 90s. And you're talking about Jimmy Carter and inflation, and I'm thinking, wow, the last time we actually did something about the regulatory side of things, it was major reforms, small business regulatory fairness and all that sort of thing, was in the mid-90s with the so-called Contract with America that Newt Gingrich, you know, became so prominent for spearheading. But since that time, there've been small things that have been done. You had President Trump as acting alone, with the limited power that he would have as president to put in place some streamlining of regulation. He was able to do that. But even in the first 2 years of the Trump administration, when you had him and the Republican House and Senate, you got tax reform, but you saw the regulatory side of things end up getting neglected, apart from his own streamlining, you know, the one in, two out, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There have been things we've been talking about in the free market movement for years, like regulatory budgeting, cost analysis, making Congress approve a rule before they're valid, all sorts of things that could really rein this stuff in that would literally make it impossible for Joe Biden to be doing his unilateral pen and phone whole of government programs.
Yeah.
You got to have Congress to act, and if Republicans don't step up, especially in this kind of era of mandates and censorship that Biden is pursuing now, it'd be bad for this to be a missed opportunity, you know, if Republicans did have the opportunity to do something,
yeah,
and really wrestle inflation down and make things more efficient.
Well, Republicans at least give lip service. I don't even think Democrats give lip service to looking at the deficit and our national mm-hmm. debt. I was going to ask you maybe a final question. The Federal Reserve, are they doing any good in this whole mess with inflation? What should they do?
Well, the problem has been, government-controlled money supply for over a century, so I don't think they can do good, but what mm-hmm. they can do is a lot worse, and I think in their efforts to regulate cryptocurrencies, they'll create new problems. I think COVID and the CARES Act and the kind of the fusion between the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve in terms of their interference in markets and propping up some businesses but not others and deciding who gets credit and who does not in a way that the federal government never had before. I think that, too, is a big part of supply chain and inflation and inefficiency concerns that we have now. So, you know, we shall see. Unfortunately, the financial regulatory agencies are now being enlisted in the whole climate change campaign, too. So they're not where I'm going to look for hope right at the moment.
Yeah, it's very depressing. Very depressing.
Don't be depressed, though. Be optimistic.
Hope springs eternal, my friend. And I want to thank you so very much for being with us again, Wayne. It's always a pleasure, especially after a holiday, to talk with you. The best to you, and we'll talk again, I'm sure.
Take care. You guys have a great day.
Okay, Wayne. Wayne Cruz of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, Florida, the state is rejecting 41% of math textbooks for kids because of critical race theory and other philosophies are sprinkled inside the books. We're talking about doing mathematics, for God's sake. We're going to talk about that and some other things with the proprietor of the Barber Pole himself, Andrew Ceraci.
I hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Do you have trouble with communicating, or are you drowning in clutter? You are not alone. There is a solution. This is Christiana, your clarity coach. I can help you find the clarity you need, and it's easier than you think. Whether it's your communication, your mind, or your disorganized physical space, join me Wednesdays at 5 p.m. for Clarity Corner with Christiana, and let's do this together. Remember, that's Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
What do you call the Monday after Easter? I guess you just call it the Monday after Easter. And what happens to those Easter bonnets that those women wore? Remember when you were a kid, maybe you remember Easter bonnets? I've never seen anybody with an Easter bonnet for a long time.
I remember coming home from school and having to find the rest of the eggs that we couldn't find because my parents forgot where they put them.
Yeah. Or maybe like 2 weeks later, you find a couple of eggs because everybody forgot about them.
About a month or two, they get pretty ripe.
They do, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
You're right. We used to have these chocolate. They were like marshmallow eggs. They had a hard shell, and inside was like a marshmallow nougat.
Mm-hmm.
You remember those? Maybe. They were big when I was a little kid.
I don't remember those.
Okay. Well, anyway. So, speaking of kids... And we always try to speak to kids as much as possible. Hey, we act like kids. Let's be honest on this show. Florida's Department of Education has rejected 41% of the mathematics textbooks that were submitted to private schools. They cite critical race theory and other issues. Why are you putting stuff about critical race theory of a book where you're trying to teach them what 4 and 4 equals?
Do they ever give us an example of what's in the book? I mean, I'd like to know that.
Yeah, in fact, I think there might be. Let me just hold on here because...
We can form our own opinion, basically. I mean, they're just telling us...
I'm trying to see in the story here if they even give an example. I don't... It just says, reasons for rejecting textbooks, including references to critical race theory, inclusions of Common Core, unsolicited addition of social emotional learning. Unsolicited addition of social emotional learning in mathematics. Janie is very depressed. She has 8 apples in her basket. Bobby sees that she has 8 apples, and if he buys 3 of them, she'll be less depressed. She's depressed because her little black friend is not being treated as well I don't know. Something like that, maybe.
Or don't give the white kid any because he's got enough.
All right. On that pleasant note, we've got both of the Ceresi brothers here. I'm going to start with Andrew. We got Angelo and Andrew, but Andrew... Are you surprised to hear that over 40% of the math textbooks in public schools in Florida are being turned away?
Well, Paul, you were looking for some pages on them. I had seen a couple already.
Oh, you have?
The pages. And then one of them, it said, Mom is a single mother. What did she do for a living before she had children? And it said, stripper, prostitute.
What?
These are right in the pages. And if you go...
In the math books.
In a math book. In a freaking math book.
I can't believe it. I mean, it has to be a joke.
No, it wasn't a joke.
Oh, my God.
These were all circled out on the pages. It's ridiculous. I mean...
It's worse than ridiculous.
Again, it's like I said last week. Kids in other countries in third grade are learning calculus, so the kids get smart and learn intelligent things. And look what we're trying to teach our kids.
You are exactly right. And, you know, we used to be, believe it or not, it's hard to believe, that at the top or near the top when it came to education. We're now in math 25th in the world, 25th of industrialized nations, 25th. So that's how far we've dropped. Yeah.
Look how smart we are.
It's
ridiculous.
It's really kind of scary. We've also got your brother, our eye in the northern sky in Rochester, New York, Angelo Ceresi. Angelo, I don't know if New York's got the same problem that Florida does. Maybe Florida's just got their radar up a little bit more. But do you think those kinds of textbooks, say like in math in New York State, are the public schools going through the same kind of deal there?
I haven't heard anything on the math books up here. They're talking about equity in trees up here.
Equity in trees, did you say?
Yes, in the neighborhoods and stuff.
Oh, okay, so there are certain trees that are getting more...
enough trees in certain neighborhoods, and they're talking about equity in trees.
Are we going to uproot trees and replant them in areas where there aren't enough trees now, or what?
Yeah, something like that. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I don't know if Andy remembers it, but we used to have these Dutch elms here in Rochester, New York, mm-hmm. and they had this Dutch elm disease.
I remember that.
And they had trucks coming down spraying all these trees, you know, shooting sprays up there when we were kids. And I'm sure they lost a lot of Dutch elms here in our Rochester area. But they don't say that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they were killing off... trees with the poisons.
Right. And maybe that's why they don't have the trees.
Well, we had the same problem in the Midwest, Dutch elm disease. Big, big, big issue over the years.
But now they call it they're inequity of trees.
Inequity of trees, yeah. Everything's got to be exactly the same. Right. This is, we've lost our way. Used to be a free society. Now we have to make everybody feel the same way. So that means we'll dumb down the country. You know, we'll dumb down the country so everybody is as stupid as everybody else. It goes against the whole concept of why we created our country, right, Andrew? We created our country so that people could be free to, what's the word, to prosper, free to flourish and bloom. And it was that freedom that created our country's number one ranking in so many things, because we were able to do these things without being constricted.
Well, you know, Paul, we've got to keep the 10% of the people that are whacked out in this country happy. You know, 10% of the people in this country
are whacked out.
Who wants this? Who wants that? Who wants this? 90% of the people want America to be America, that we all remember. But the 10%, we've got to cater to keep them happy.
Yeah.
Did you notice 10%? Oh. I'm thinking I'm high there, to be honest with you. I think it's probably about 2 or 3%.
Right. Yeah, the most. Maybe even 1%. That's all.
That's right. But we got to keep them happy. Otherwise, they're going to cry. And the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah. Yeah.
I call it the pussification of America.
Yes, that's a good word.
I said that 3 years ago. I said that. There's no question about it.
Yeah. We're going soft. There's no question about it.
There's textbooks up here. I haven't heard nothing yet on that. I imagine that now that that's in the news about Florida, I'm sure we'll be hearing something about that up here, too.
And we've talked about this before, guys, but one of the good things that's come about with all of this critical race theory and craziness of things that are being taught in schools is that the parents, it's like you've woken up the sleeping, bear. The parents are becoming more focused on what their kids are being taught. There are more people probably attending school board functions. There are more people that want to see what is going on with what they are being taught. So from that standpoint, isn't it kind of a good thing that are we not getting parents a little bit more involved with their kids?
They should be.
You know, Paul, we've trusted. This is what happened. People put faith in their government. Meanwhile, the government was slipping things right under your nose to your kids. You weren't paying attention.
That's right.
And, you know, we didn't pay attention for about 2.5 generations.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're paying attention, and we're really surprised at what they've been teaching us. And now we realize, well, we got two generations of messed up, very messed up kids.
Speaking of this, I want to read to both of you guys a little craziness. A public university in Ohio, they're going to pay $400,000 in damages and attorney's fees to a teacher who refused to use this guy's or gal's preferred gender title in class. A philosophy professor, it's at Shawnee State University in Ohio, responded to a male student's question during a philosophy class by saying, "Yes, sir." Well, apparently by calling this guy who wanted to be something other than a sir, by saying sir, the student identified to the professor that he was a transgender and demanded to be referred to as a woman in the future. Anyway, it went to court, and the court said, "What are you, nuts?" And they, because the school sided with the kid, okay? And the teacher didn't agree to the student's request to call him, I don't know what he wanted to be called, I guess a feminine title. And anyway, it went to court. And the bottom line was the Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the teacher. And they had to pay him $400,000. But this is what we've gotten to now. I mean, we've gotten to this kind of craziness. And now there are some people that don't want to be called male or female. They want to be called they.
Well, Paul, I experienced that firsthand Saturday at a funeral.
You did? Oh, that's right. You were going to a funeral in your... Go ahead. Tell us about it.
My poor son says, "Dad, I haven't seen Brielle in 10 years, which was his cousin. And now she's a man. I don't know how I'm going to react to this." I said, "Don't worry. Follow me."
Now, you knew you knew this
I knew
girl.
Her when she was born, of course.
And she was a girl when you knew her. And now, you, for the first time since her change, you saw her at the funeral?
Yes, 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 yes.
How'd that go?
And, well, it came up to me. And, "Hello, Uncle Andrew, how are you?" And I just shook its hand and said, "I'm fine, how are you?" And that was it.
That was it?
That was it.
No extended talk with this person?
No. I was really kind of upset because, you know, you see me at work. I'm always in a dress shirt and dress slacks.
You are. You always dress well.
And I went to this funeral, and again, they were dressed like the typical American people. I mean, you know, you got to dress up a little bit. Even at a funeral, it looked decent.
Yes, you should.
And everybody there was all casual and this and that. And the thing that really shocked me is the transgender person was dressed exactly like me.
I guess that was a shock. Would you have recognized this woman-turned-man if you had been walking down the street?
Yeah, the face was there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if that's what makes you happy, fine. Just don't push it on me, and you go live your life, I'll go live mine.
Yeah. But you were clearly uncomfortable with the transition, obviously.
I was not that I was uncomfortable. I'm just not going to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just
I do.
How I am. That's what I believe. I believe God made man and he made woman. And it made nothing.
You're not going to change. You're not going to change biologically a human being, no matter what kind of surgery you do. They're still going to be what they were born.
Look at what happened in the Florida prisons over here. The transgendered men, they put in the women's prisons, right? And the transgendered men are making the women pregnant in the prisons.
That's true. There's a guy that's been accused of doing that.
Look, if you want to be a woman, cut it off.
Ouch.
Well,
Angelo, I want your thoughts. And I don't want to laugh. I want your thoughts. Do you think, would you be uncomfortable if you met somebody that you remembered being a woman and... you saw them at a function and you realized that they were now, or maybe you knew ahead of time, but anyway, how would you approach them?
I'd just approach them as a human being. That's all. It wouldn't bother me. I mean,
if
whatever floats your boat, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't condone on that stuff, you know what I'm saying? But hey, who am I to judge, you know?
Right. I'm thinking like, you know, you have a reunion of a school class or something.
Mm-hmm.
And one of your classmates changed genders, I would be a little bit, I think I would approach them.
Yeah.
I'd say hello, you know, how are you, you know?
Right. Right, I would.
But I'd still feel very, I'd feel a little bit uncomfortable. But you'd want to kind of, I mean, you're going to be, what's the word?
You feel uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, but no, but you want to empathize, right? And even you, Andrew, did you not empathize, at all with this woman turned man at all? Any empathy?
No. None whatsoever.
None at all.
No, I mean, that's what you want to do. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Go do what you want to do. Just don't expect me to.
Did this person kind of pick up on your attitude? You know what I mean? I mean, did this person feel rebuffed in your opinion?
I'd imagine.
Okay.
But again, that don't bother me either. It's just the way I am.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Gentlemen, this is one of the most interesting discussions we've had in a long time, but I want to thank both of you. We've run out of time here. I trust that both of you had a wonderful Easter weekend.
Oh yes, thank you.
Beautiful.
We had a little bit of rain and snow here.
You had some snow up there in Rochester?
Yeah.
Not surprising. You know, April. April can be that kind of thing.
Yeah, hey, we had snow here in May.
Sure. I'm from Chicago. I understand that. All right, guys. Thanks so much. And Andrew, we'll be talking again on Wednesday, my friend.
You got it.
All right, guys.
Thanks
so much. Bye, Angelo.
Bye.
All right. There we go. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, we got a lot of things to talk about, including who are the most popular of all time first ladies.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Philly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. I also hope you listen to the Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can darn sure use the money.
Hi there. This is marine wildlife artist and conservationist Dr. Guy Harvey. Please listen to the Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They need to feel worthy.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final segment of Freedom Works on Monday, April the 18th, and we thank you so very much for being with us. By the way, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, but if you cannot listen live, Big Ed's got all our shows on podcast, bless his heart. Just go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Well, as usual, we can always find a couple of hypocrites in Washington. Let's talk about Congressman Cori Bush. She's a Missouri Democrat. She flies and screams about defunding police. That's been one of her big deals. She said, I always tell fellow Democrats, if you had all fixed this thing, meaning the police situation, before I got here, I wouldn't have to say these things. Anyway, she pours tens of thousands of dollars into private security for herself during the first quarter of this year. This has pushed her security bills to more than $300,000. Can you imagine spending $300,000 on personal protection? This newest security check that, she reported spending $70,000 plus on security services between January and March. So it's always these people, you know, pushing defunding the police. And they're running around with eight or nine different people that are protecting them with guns. It's just so hypocritical. Everybody knows That's what's going on. I found a story from last week that's rather interesting. The Republican National Committee has unanimously decided and voted to withdraw from the Commission on Presidential Debates. They think they're biased. Well, I know they're biased. Look at the people that they have as moderators in these debates. Have you ever seen a really conservative moderator in these debates?
Been a long time.
It's been a long time. The RNC said that it is not moving away from debates, but objecting to the Committee on Presidential Debates' control over the process. Now, CPD, you know, that committee, has organized debates for both president and vice president for more than 30 years. For more than 30 years. Here is, what is her name? This is the head of the, the RNC chairwoman is Rona McDaniel. She said, the RNC voted to withdraw, and we are going to find newer, better debate platforms to ensure the future nominees are not forced to go through the biased CPD in order to make their case to the American people. And away you go. I would like to see, I would like to see some sort of a list of people that you know are going to ask fair questions. And not having some far lefty that hosts a program on MSNBC, you know, doing these things. There used to be, do you remember PBS, McNeil and Lerner, McNeil, Lehrer, you remember those two guys?
Yeah.
And one of them, I think it was Jim Lehrer used to do a lot of these debates. And people felt that he was at least, he was liberal, but people felt he was somewhat objective in his questions. You know,
I still remember the best one of all was Newt Gingrich against CNN running for president during the Obama time. And the very first question of the debate was from CNN about Newt Gingrich's open affair marriage with another woman and stuff like that. And he just ripped them up and down. I could listen to that audio all day on that.
Yeah. He really held them to task.
Oh, he ripped them.
They're so hypocritical. With all of the people like Bill Clinton at the time running around doing the things that he did. Yeah, I agree with you. All right. Before we get to our top 10, we have a good one, by the way. Is there anything new on the sports front? Are baseball teams doing okay?
The Rays are at 500 right now, which are well below the Blue Jays on top. Yankees are second. The Red Sox are third.
We don't like that, do we?
Yeah. They went into a four-game skid, and the Lightning are just buying their time till the playoffs start.
I saw the Lightning win a game the other night, and they're they're kind of getting ready. I think that hopefully they'll be okay. All right, my friend, it is time for our top 10, and I'm... this is a good one. This comes from, these are the top 10 most popular first ladies, okay, through history. And it's a research thing that is done by Siena Research Institute. Now, they have been conducting a survey about every 10 years meant to measure the public's opinions of the first ladies over the years because, of course, they change. In fact, the further away you get from a first lady's tenure, generally the more popular they become. Believe it or not. All right, here we go. Number 10. Edith Roosevelt. I did not even know and remember. Well, remember. Edith Roosevelt is known, she was Teddy Roosevelt's wife and is known for expanding the number of social events at the White House, known for being a center in D.C. social society, being sure that other politically involved wives followed suit. All right, number 9. Martha Washington, the original first lady, she took on a role that was entirely undefined. Nobody knew how you would treat. They didn't even use, of course, the term first lady. She was called Lady Washington, of course. She was known for keeping up her appearances kind and down to earth. All right. Number 8, Jackie Kennedy, John Kennedy's wife. During her time as First Lady, she focused largely on White House restoration, and she took a special interest in artwork and integrity of the interior decoration in the historic building. Okay. Number seven. Rosalynn Carter, Jimmy Carter's wife, often made appearances at cabinet meetings during her husband's tenure. She appeared as a representative abroad on President Carter's behalf, most often appearing in Latin America. All righty. Number six. Dolly Madison. Do you remember Dolly Madison donuts and cupcakes and all that kind of thing? Yeah. Well, anyway, Dolly Madison, James Madison's wife, left her mark by focusing efforts towards bipartisanship. She was the fourth First Lady. She had a lot of room to make the role her own, as expectations were still being developed. Okay, number five. Betty Ford. Betty became one of the most beloved First Ladies. High approval ratings. Known for being much more progressive than her husband Gerald Ford and many members of her party. She was very passionate about women's rights. Okay, number four. Lady Bird Johnson. What a name, Lady Bird. Lyndon Johnson's wife, known and beloved for her efforts towards environmental protection, very first of First Ladies to interact with Congress directly, having her own politically motivated staff. Okay, number three. Laura Bush. That's George W. Bush's wife. Often respected and admired for her focus on education. She was a teacher, by the way, Laura Bush. Number two. Abigail Adams, that was the second First Lady, John Adams' wife, typically ranked very high, considered the closest advisor to her husband, John Adams, the mother of who would become President John Quincy Adams. So pretty good, right? All right. Any idea, Ed? Do you have any guess whatsoever who might be number one for most popular?
Because the profile of her husband, I'm going to say Michelle Obama.
Okay. Excuse me, I took a sip of coffee there. You're absolutely wrong.
Good.
It was Eleanor Roosevelt.
Really?
She is also the longest serving because her husband was in his fourth term.
That's true, yeah.
When he died. Yeah. But Eleanor Roosevelt, during World War II, consistently she has been ranked number one. She had a 65% approval rating among Americans. She worked to further women's rights. Even after her husband's death and she was out of the White House, she was like a roving ambassador. Very beloved woman. All right, there you go. Thank you so very much for being with us. We will be back on Wednesday. Always remember, freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.